Hey, what you're about to listen to is the podcast version of what was a live radio segment on KPFA. Consequently, when you hear us give out a call-in number, you don't want to call it. If you're listening to this as a podcast, it is already too late, and nobody on the other end of that phone number is going to have any useful answers for you. All right, let's go to this week's Corona Calls. We're going to turn, as we do most weeks at this time, to new developments in the world of COVID-19 and the other influenza-like illnesses that spike around this time of year. Our guest is Dr. John Swartzberg, clinical professor emeritus of infectious diseases at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. Good morning, Dr. Swartzberg.
Good morning, Brian.
So since this is the last time that we'll have you on live before the holidays hit, I thought maybe we could start with a temperature check of where cold and flu season appears to be heading. I was taking a look at the charts that are left up on the CDC's website, such as they are, and COVID levels seem relatively low and stable. Flu is picking up, and other unattributed influenza-like illnesses, I guess this would be mostly colds, rhinoviruses, seem to be pretty high. How are you thinking about the risks of holiday social activities?
Be careful. Because it is respiratory season, and in the past, prior to the pandemic, we had two respiratory viruses of real concern. They were RSV and influenza. And since this time in 2019, we added a third, and that is COVID. So we will have COVID and RSV and influenza to contend with. As you mentioned, the overall good news is pretty good. Where we are right now, the influenza season looks pretty typical for what we've seen before, maybe arriving a little bit late. There's been an interesting observation nationally that the number of cases of influenza-like illness and the flu itself have sort of leveled off in young children. And that is always nice to see, but that often portends that we're going to start to see a lot more cases in older children, young, middle-aged, and older adults. That's typically what we see. Influenza tends to spread from the kids to older people. So influenza is probably the biggest concern right now. As you mentioned, COVID is low nationally, although the Northeast and the Midwest seem to be picking up more than, interestingly, the South, which is often the bellwether. And the West is about the lowest, and California is one of the lowest in the West in terms of the number of cases of COVID we're seeing and the number of hospitalizations, which are quite low. So COVID remains fairly quiet, although the trends are clearly showing that they're starting to go up, but it's pretty low still. And in RSV, clearly we're in the RSV season. We're not having a terrible season. As a matter of fact, like last year, we're having a much milder season so far. And I think the explanation for that is the vaccine. It really makes a difference. And we're seeing far fewer hospitalizations this year so far and last year with little kids. And little kids are the ones that really suffer a lot. And we're seeing fewer hospitalizations in older adults. Those are the ones who suffer a lot. So putting it all together, Brian, I think we're in pretty good shape for being in the respiratory season.
The RSV vaccine was approved in mid-2023. So this would be basically the first time we'd have an opportunity to see the impacts of the ensuing vaccination campaign.
Well, we saw it, I think, last year too. We should see it even more this year. I guess since we're talking about immunization, should give the bad news, and the bad news is that we did not have nearly the number of people vaccinated last year for RSV and for influenza and for COVID that we should have, and this year it's even worse. And that may be bad in terms of what we're going to see this year in terms of the winter with influenza, RSV, and COVID.
Right. Other CDC statistics I was going through suggested a roughly 30% drop year over year in the number of people who've gotten this year's COVID vaccine. That's pretty dramatic.
It is, and it's so disappointing. It's especially disappointing for the young children. We had more pediatric deaths last year than we had seen in ages, and we've already had one pediatric death this year from influenza. And in almost all of these cases, the children haven't been immunized, and that's just really tragic. And then the other group that really needs to be immunized against influenza and RSV and COVID are older people. Those are the folks who get hospitalized. Those are the folks who die. And it's just astounding to me to see particularly people over 65 not getting vaccinated because they're putting themselves at substantial risk.
We're also, I may be jumping the gun to a January topic here, but it looks like we will hit the threshold where we have sustained transmission of measles in this country for long enough that we get taken off the list of countries that have eradicated measles. And I was curious if you could talk about the kind of cumulative risks here. My understanding is measles hammers immune memory. So a lot of the injury and death from measles can come from secondary or opportunistic infections.
Right. This is something that was discovered probably around two or three decades ago. And that is, everybody thinks of measles as fever, cough, feeling miserable, and then of course the classic rash. And that is the classical measles. But nobody sort of looked under the hood in terms of what measles was doing to the rest of our virus, the measles virus, what the measles virus was doing to the rest of our body. And the important thing that we learned is that it destroys our memory immunity. That is, you know, we count on our immune system remembering what we've encountered in the past so that when we encounter it in the future, we don't get sick because we have an immunity to it. But the measles virus destroys that either to a high degree, moderate degree, or sometimes a low degree, but just about everybody suffers from a destruction of some degree of their immunity, immune memory. What that translates to is more illnesses from other things after measles. And you can look at very interesting studies, for example, of children who were immunized and didn't get measles compared to children who were not immunized, got measles. And those children who weren't immunized and got measles, over the next 2 years, 3 years, we see a much greater amount of antibiotics that those children have to take for infections that they wouldn't have had otherwise. This is all compared to the group that didn't get measles because they were immunized. So it has longer term consequences than we previously recognized. More antibiotic consumption, more illness, more hospitalizations, and tragically, more deaths. So measles, we need to prevent it not just for the acute illness, but for the longer term sequelae or longer term consequences of that infection.
It's January 20th, I believe, the date on which we will have gone a full year with continuous measles transmission and lose our status as a country that has eradicated measles.
I'm glad you pointed that out. It's since 2000, the United States has been a country that's been designated essentially measles free, that we've eliminated measles. And people will say we may or may not see us losing that classification toward the end of January 2026, a month from now, roughly. I think it's highly, highly likely we're going to lose that classification. So the rest of the world is going to look at the United States and say, here's a country that for 25 years had eliminated measles, and now we can't say that anymore. Every person who comes to the United States, when they look on the website from wherever they are, they're going to see that the United States is a country where measles is a risk because there's ongoing transmission. We have lost that classification.
Final news item I wanted to touch on, Dr. Swartzberg, is that according to anonymous sources at the FDA who are being quoted in multiple outlets. Multiple outlets say they've spoken to multiple sources in the FDA. No idea if they're the same ones talking to every outlet. The Food and Drug Administration is about to put a so-called black box warning, which the news reports say is its most serious form of a warning, on COVID vaccines. Most of the news reports say this as if the lay public knows what a black box warning is, or what its consequences are. Could you explain it to us?
Sure. When the FDA considers that there's a serious problem with a vaccine or with the drug that they've approved, then they will put a black box, that is, in the package insert on all their sites. When one wants to read about that vaccine or drug, they will have a black box right in the middle of that, saying essentially a warning that this product carries an increased risk and one should be extremely careful when using it. Black boxes have been very helpful in warning physicians and patients about a drug they may be taking that they may not realize has some serious consequences. So I've heard those same sort of cautions coming out of the FDA, as you were just talking about, Brian, in terms of a black box for the COVID vaccine. Where did this come from? It came from the person in charge of vaccines and vaccine at the CDC. And it clearly came from the director of the CDC, excuse me, FDA, and it clearly from the director of the FDA. And what this was, I think many of the listeners may have heard about this because there was a leak of a memo from about, 10, 12 days ago. Where
this is the Vinay Prashad memo that we discussed on this program.
That's correct. That claimed that he had discovered, Prasad, had discovered 10 cases of people who had died from the COVID vaccine. He gave no information about those cases. Apparently, his 10 cases were reviewed by Prasad and another person who is an anti-vaxxer in the FDA, now in a very high position in the FDA, a PhD not in vaccines or medicine, but a PhD. Nevertheless, those were the two main people who did this review. Apparently, the scientists at the FDA, the vast majority of them, completely disagreed with their interpretation that the deaths were caused by the COVID vaccine. The bottom line is there may have been rare deaths caused by the COVID vaccine. We don't know. These cases, any death associated with the vaccine was carefully looked at previously by the CDC, and no evidence that the vaccine caused this, but now Prasad is claiming these 10 deaths, but gives us no data and is not allowing anybody outside of his purview to review that data. So it's not peer reviewed at all. Based upon this, he has the rumor on the street is he's going to use that data to put a black box on about COVID vaccines, which will further drive down the number of people getting vaccinated, which would be tragic. This, frankly, Brian, is never the way science moves forward. This is not science. This is ideology, pure and simple. It's not science. We need to have independent people who don't have a bias looking at this data to make sure that it's true. And you know, even if it is, of the hundreds of millions of people who have been vaccinated against COVID, tragic, any death from the vaccine would be a tragedy, of course, but it would be very, very, very rare. And that's even if those 10 cases were actually caused by the vaccine.
All right, Dr. Swartzberg, another time I think we should take up the topic of how someone like Vinay Prashad becomes a very prominent vaccine denier. He, as far as I can tell, had a pretty clean academic CV up until the pandemic hit, although his credentials were in oncology, cancer treatment, not virology. But that's all the time we have for this morning because I got to spend some time raising money for KPFA. Thank you so much for spending another Monday with us.
You're welcome, Brian, and I hope you feel better.
All right, that does it for this week's edition of Corona Calls. If you want to send in a question for next week's, you can email coronacalls@kpfa.org. Or tune in live to Call In Live. Usually we air Monday mornings right after 7:30 news headlines on KPFA 94.1 FM in the Bay Area or kpfa.org anywhere in the world. We put a little bit of extra work into repackaging this live segment as a podcast because it feels like the information is useful to a lot of people. We ought to make it accessible through as many channels as possible. You can help us get the word out by rating and reviewing it in whatever app you're using to listen. And if you want to pitch in some cash, we wouldn't say no. We always take donations at kpfa.org. I appreciate it if you mentioned Corona Calls when you make your pledge. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiegert. I hope you have a great week. Stay well. We'll talk to you next time.